WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, Mid-Michigan and beyond? I'm Isaac Constance, filling in for regular host Al Martin for the last day this week. That's right, Al is back on the radio starting tomorrow, Friday, returning from Orlando. But you know what? I intend to make it a good going out. So first off, we're going to talk about the Detroit Tigers. It's so hard talking about baseball because it's a mercurial sport. You never know which way it's going. And I was just saying how the Tigers should have swept the Twins. And now the Tigers lost the series 2-1 against the Twins. We'll talk about that. Also, the Russian Olympic team. The track team's already suspended from the Olympics, barring some unforeseen change. But should the entire team be suspended? We'll take you through the entire series of events that's led to this calamity for that entire country because of state-sponsored doping. And then after we had Greg Campy, head coach of Oakland's men's basketball, on yesterday, we've got Casey Johnson, Chicago Bulls beat reporter for the Chicago Tribune, calling in around 1:30 this afternoon. He's going to talk about Denzel Valentine and the Bulls summer league roster moves, as well as everything else, NBA, of course. And finally, we're going to hit you like we do with every Thursday, my first time ever, reading off your current sports throwback Thursday moments of the week. You don't want to miss that. And so much more. This is WKR's Current Sports. If you've got any questions or comments, call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. But hey, let's start the show. The regularly dependable Francisco Rodriguez gave up a deuce of homers for three total runs in the ninth inning, and the Tigers lost 4-1 to the Twins Wednesday afternoon at Comerica. The game had previously been struck in a gridlock, 1-1 from the bottom of the first all through the rest of the frame. But Matt Kepler's two-out solo blaster to right field on a full-counted snap, the 1-1 tie. Eddie Rosario then rubbed salt in the wounds with a two-run home run on a 0-1 count. The Tigers lost 2-3 to the Twins and began a seven-game road trip tonight in Chicago against the White Sox. Pelfrey is expected to take the mound, so God bless the Tigers. Let's see how that goes. Michigan State handed out a scholarship offer to cornerback Josiah Scott of Fairfield, Ohio High School. The 5'10", 175-pound defensive back is rated a three-star recruit by Rivals.com and highlights Michigan State, Iowa, Pittsburgh, West Virginia, and Cincinnati among his 20 scholarship offers. Scott has narrowed his list of schools down to a final four of the Spartans, Hawkeyes, Panthers, and Mountaineers, and Scott did say that Michigan State has an edge on his other suitors. Scott hopes to determine his destination before the start of his senior season. So maybe big news coming up for MSU football. The Detroit Lions have signed free agent Quanterris Smith, a 26-year-old defensive end. Contract terms are not yet available. But what we do know is Smith started his career with the Denver Broncos in 2013 and 2014, hitting the field of 15 of 16 games. Last season, however, was spent on the New York Jets and the Jacksonville Jaguars practice squads without ever seeing game action. Smith was drafted in the fifth round out of Western Kentucky in 2013. He has registered 11 career tackles, including two for loss, and successfully deflected two pass attempts. Wave bye-bye to Brad. That's right, Brad Richards, 36, announced his retirement from hockey today with a release through the NHL PA, becoming the second crucial Red Wing to feel too old for the game within this summer. His 15 seasons include stints with the Blackhawks, Lightning, Stars, Rangers, and of course the Red Wings in 1,126 career games. Richards came to Detroit after boosting the Blackhawks in their successful pursuit of the 2015 Stanley Cup. Last season was down for him, however, as Richards produced just 10 goals and 28 points in 68 games with the Wings. Richard's greatest career achievement came 12 years ago when he was announced the Conn Smythe winner after 26 points in 23 games to help lead the Lightning all the way. Congrats on the retirement, Brad, and wish you all the best in the future. Then, the MDen, the University of Michigan's official merchandise seller, gave a sneak peek into Nike's new line of Michigan gear for reporters and released 5 images publicly. One of the public images was Jim Harbaugh's bold crew neck. However, instead of a slender block M in the middle like before, the new crew neck places a block M underneath the right shoulder, mirrored by a Jumpman logo below the left. The change will officially take place on August 1st, and Amarillo and Blue, not Maize and Blue, that's right, will be in full utilization for the season. Eli Brooks committed to play basketball at U of M. The Spring Grove senior guard also had offers from defending champs Villanova, Ohio State, NC State, Kansas State, and George Mason. Brooks is a 6'1", 170-pound guard who averaged 25 points per game last year. He registered 67 total assists and splashed 79 three-point buckets as well. Brooks is Michigan's second catch of the 2017 class, as Jordan Poole, a 4-star recruit out of Milwaukee, also looks set to don the new fancy Jordan logo. Early this morning, the Court of Arbitration for Sport denied the appeal of 68 Russian athletes seeking to overturn the ban imposed by the IAAF following allegations of state-sponsored doping and cover-ups. The 68 athletes were track and field athletes, and this decision could add pressure on the IOC to exclude the entire country of Russia entirely from next month's games in Rio de Janeiro. But the arbitration court ruling did not necessarily settle the matter for good. The court stressed the decision is not binding on the IOC, which has the final say as the supreme organizer of the games. The IOC said that it would study and analyze the decision and make its final ruling on the participation of Russian athletes in the coming days. The Olympics open in Rio on August 5th. The WNBA has fined 3 teams as well. The New York Liberty, Phoenix Mercury, and Indiana Fever, as well as their players, for sporting plain black warm-up t-shirts in light of recent shootings of and by police officers. All 3 teams were fined $5,000 and each player was fined $500. While the shirts were the Adidas brand, the official outfitter of the league, WNBA rules state that uniforms may not be altered in any way. Wow. That's all we got for you today, folks, for your current sports quick hit headliners. If you have any questions or comments about any of those, hit us up at 517-355-9527, 517-355-WKAR. Also, you can tweet us at WKAR_sports. Without further ado, let's get to the show.
Bread and butter.
Driven to right field. That ball is hit well, and it's going to go. It's out of here. It's a home run with 2 outs for Max Kepler in the ninth. He was waiting for it, and he deposits that ball in the seats, and the Twins have the lead.
It's got to be frustrating to battle the way you did and not come away with anything to show for it.
That's the game. You can't get frustrated. You got to take positives away, and Irvin did a great job as well on the other side. So you knew it was going to be a battle. I think after about the second or third inning, I don't think you'd had much of a clue after the first couple of hitters of both innings. But kept their team in the game. Unfortunately, we just weren't able to come away with the W today.
The way the offense has sort of been scuffling collectively, do you leave yourself a little margin for error, even more so than usual in games and situations like this?
You can't think about it that way. Offense comes and goes. I think if you pitch consistently over the long term, you're going to win a lot of games. Our offense is going to bounce back. We're too talented not to.
Welcome back to WKR's Current Sports. My name's Isaac Constance, and kicking it off, you heard Justin Verlander talking about his team's loss to the lowly Minnesota Twins in an ugly outing and an ugly week here for the Detroit Tigers, losing 2 of 3 to a team that really, frankly, is just pretty bad. 35-59 on the season and 15-30 away. The Tigers had the game at Comerica, and they seemingly had the game in hand. 1-1 from the first inning all the way to the ninth. It was stuck in traffic pretty much, just like gridlock. And you know, the Tigers, they just held on. And Francisco Rodriguez, who has been very dependable for this team, one of the AL leaders in saves with 26, he just let it slip. The ninth ending, he gave up 3 home runs, 2 home runs themselves. And you saw, or heard rather, Kepler's home run shot from that. He's only batting 229 on the season. So it's not as if this was even the toughest of opposition when it comes to the Twins. And the Twins aren't tough competition to begin with. The Twins had 3 home runs on the day. The first was Joe Mauer off the bat in the first inning against Justin Verlander. But Verlander was almost spotless from that point on. Verlander went 8 innings through, only allowing that 1 run, only walking 2 batters, and striking out 9. 8 innings, 112 pitchers, and Verlander really does look to be rediscovering that consistency and that pitch handle, which made him a Cy Young winner and which made him so lethal so many years ago. However, for the Tigers, that's just not going to do it if the bullpen gives up late inning runs, which was the case in this game. But more importantly, Francisco Rodriguez as well, just like Justin Verlander and just like Michael Fulmer, has not been the problem for this team. You expect even your best to make the occasional mistake, and that's what Francisco Rodriguez did this last outing. He's only 1-on-1 on the season. Like I mentioned, 26 saves. But his performance this game was not at all symbolic of what he's been doing throughout the year for the Tigers. Now, what also isn't symbolic of the Tigers' performance this season, but what really needs some correction, is the hitting. The Tigers' hitting has been atrocious recently. For a team that's 8th in the entire league for batting average, after battling through a tough stretch that they're still stuck in the midst of, I mean, they just can't find a way to win. The Tigers haven't batted in more than 4 runs since July 6th. Guys, it's July 21st now. And I know that there was an All-Star break, but the average ERA in baseball history rounds out right to about 4. You've got about 15 or 16 teams pitching below it, and you've got about 15 or 16 teams pitching above that. The average ERA in baseball right now is even higher. The Tigers is 4.48. So when your batting lineup is 8th in the league, how do you expect your pitching to give up 3 runs some games, in this past outing, 4 runs, and then at the same time lose? I mentioned how impressed I was with the Tigers pitching staff just back on Tuesday, I believe, when Daniel Boyd held the Twins to a shutout. He was fantastic. Francisco Rodriguez that game got a save. It was a total team effort. And the Tigers only batted in 1 run. But, you know, with the Tigers, when they do that, you consider it an off day. The Tigers' batting lineup, quite frankly, looks lethargic and fatigued. They just have not been hitting with their usual swing and stride these past few games. I want to bring up 2 guys in particular. And first off, I've got to mention that Cameron Maybin has slumped. But at the same time, with the amount that he was exceeding expectations earlier on this year, a little slump for Maybin is not the most unexpected or the most worrisome thing for this team going forward. What is 2 guys who have been so reliable for this team throughout the past 5 years, let alone. And that's Miguel Cabrera, who's batting 231 in July. Not great whatsoever. He went 2-4 last night, but 231, if you're batting at the right time, meaning when you've got runners in scoring position and your slugging percentage is high and all of that, okay, I can deal with 231. But he's not. He's got two RBIs in the month. Two. Yeah, that's something that Jared Saltalamacchia matched with one swing with his walk-off homer just earlier this week against the Twins, in fact, in that 1-0 outing. Miguel Cabrera, the best batter of our generation, needs to pick it up. It's just that plain and simple. So he's the number three batter for the Detroit Tigers. He fits in right at the bottom of that first inning in the hitting slot. Okay, Ian Kinsler yesterday for the Tigers also got a home run. Good job for him. He, you know, is consistent, and he's been playing fairly well recently also. You know, maybe not perfectly, but the other most notorious example of the Tigers batting, which has just totally been lackluster in recent performances, is Victor Martinez. And this is the one that I'm really going to cringe while saying, because 231's bad, and it is absolutely eye-closingly poor for Miguel Cabrera. But at the same time, it's 231. Plenty of batters do it. The Tigers, both of the Tigers' catchers would pray and hope to hit 231. Saltalamacchia is right above 200 right now, I believe at 201. And James McCann is 196, I think, a little bit below 200 and in the starting lineup. But Miguel Cabrera, 231's bad. Victor Martinez, however, is batting .091 in the last 7 days. And that's no aberration. Victor Martinez, who started off as one of the best Tigers hitters this year, has faded down the stretch. And I even hesitate to use the phrase down the stretch because we're only about halfway through the regular season, a little bit further. But the Detroit Tigers have plenty and plenty of games to go. And Victor Martinez already seems to be fading off, which is horrifyingly worrisome and troubling for this team. In July, he's batting .150. Not too much better at the end of the day. And now Detroit travels on over to Chicago, a team who has also faced their fair share of adversity after a hot start. And Mike Pelfrey takes the mound. Usually you'd etch that in as a loss, but all of the Tigers pitchers have been playing well recently. Maybe Pelfrey can somehow manage to overturn his trend of terrible pitching throughout the season and pitch well enough. But the thing is, it's not going to matter. This is a Tigers team which salary-wise and foundationally is built on their batters. And when the batters aren't converting, it's hard to blame the pitching staff. And it's been hard to blame the pitching staff throughout the month of July. Again, Detroit is hitting eighth overall in this season. And the last time that they batted in more than four runs was July 6th. A 12-run showing against the Cleveland Indians, of all teams. So, again, folks, the Detroit Tigers, anything but impressive as of late, losing 2 of 3 to a very bad Minnesota Twins team, even while they were at Comerica. If you have any thoughts on that, call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. 9527. Now I actually want to take the subject to something which transcends baseball and transcends any individual sport. That's the Olympics. And the Olympics have been marred by uncertainty and drama throughout the leading up days coming to them. And they're now only 2 weeks away. You heard me saying the quick hit headliners, August 5th is the start date. So pop your popcorn and all that, but not if you're a Russia fan. If you're a Russia fan, it's looking more and more likely like Russia, who last Summer Olympics in 2012 finished third in the medal count, only behind the U.S. and China, might not be allowed to participate in the games. Now, this comes after a long saga, which I'll take you through very briefly. I'll abbreviate it as quickly and as shortly as I can. Canadian lawyer Richard McLaren was commissioned by the World Anti-Doping Agency and issued a report on Monday which accused the Russian government of sponsoring doping and organizing a movement which encouraged its athletes to take illegal drugs to assist them in their performance. It happened 28 times to summer and winter Olympic sports. Now, ultimately, this obviously caught the eye of the IOC, of international boards, of countries in general. And there's been an outpouring of mixed reaction as far as from Russia saying individual athletes should be examined for doping, not the entire country. Even though McLaren's report clearly did insist that Russia and their government, the sporting body of Russia, had instilled in these athletes the mindset that to win, you got to dope, and thus encourage them and coerce them to take these drugs. Now, Russia, of course, is very biased in that issue, and many other countries are petitioning the opposite direction, hoping that Russia entirely is banned from the Olympics. Now, ultimately, this all comes up to the IOC, the International Olympic Committee, who's ruled over the games for as long as they've been around. Yet the IOC, in this complex hierarchy of power, decide that they don't really want to handle it head on. So they decide to defer to different agencies, such as the IAAF, the International Supreme Track governing body, who was the one who really pushed this case in the first place. The IAAF insisted that 68 Russian athletes with the state-sponsored doping regime were suspended throughout the Olympics. And the Board of International Sports Decision, called the Court of Arbitration for Sport, just declined Russia's appeal, asking them to overturn that decision from the IAAF. Now, the IAAF report did exclude two people from that report. That's Daria Klishina, a long jumper who is based out of the United States, and most importantly, Yuliva Stepanova, who's a middle distance runner who also lives here in the U.S. and is the whistleblower, actually, on the Russian government's attempts. So out of 70 track and field athletes right now, for Russia, you've got two competing. Just two. 1/35th, to be exact. Last year, Russia won 18 medals in track and field, including 8 golds in London. And now, Russia might not even be involved in the tournament whatsoever, in the Olympics. It's looking almost certain that they won't be in track because the Olympic Committee, like I mentioned, did decide to hand over their power to the IAAF, and their decision has stood after being reviewed in a court of law. Now, the committee itself will decide on Sunday whether athletes from Russia will be allowed to participate in the Olympic Games whatsoever. So we could feasibly see one of the world's biggest countries and biggest sports competitors all excluded, with the exception of maybe two people, from the Olympics. What do you think about that, folks? Call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527, because I'll be honest, I don't have a problem with it. I think that, yes, maybe you should go individual to individual. But as I mentioned, this Olympics competition is 2 weeks away. Maybe you can blame the Olympic Committee or whoever you want for stalling, that's a Russian joke, on this whole debate. But at the same time, You can't really blame them for handing down the sword of punishment when athletes are appointed to represent the state of Russia in this competition. And when the Russian state itself says, well, to compete and to win, we're going to need you to take this supplement. Yeah. Then it's fair to rule over the entire body as one and say, despite all these athletes' individual dreams, the entity that they are representing is corrupt, it's unfair, and it would be unfair to other countries to allow them to participate. That's certainly what I think. For countries who are scrutinizing each and every move of their athletes to make sure that there's no violation, to disagree with that so wholeheartedly and do exactly the converse, go all over. You hear Siri actually picking up my voice right there. That's one of the funniest things. But to hear all of that and then still have Russia go and say, you know, take this pill, take whatever, that's not right. Russia should be suspended from this Olympics, every single athlete, because at the end of the day, it's not expeditious or realistic to expect the Olympic Committee to conduct drug testing right now. That's hardly random and arbitrary, which is how drug testing should be. Athletes have had times to lay off the juice. So it just would not be a fair procedure to other teams to do anything but say, since the state issued this, and this is a competition between countries, not just individuals, Russia needs to be suspended. Right now, I want to bring in my engineer for the week. I want to thank him, Seth Kinker. And then we're actually going to hit a caller on the line. Ethan Merrill, I believe, is going to be calling in, as he actually texted me. Ethan's a former production assistant here. Answer the phone, LOL. But Seth, what I think about this issue is that's just so one-sided. We have never seen anything like this, to have state-structured and state-directed doping. You hear about problems within sports all the time, and that's fine. Athletes getting an advantage themselves is nothing new. But for a state to insist upon this for its athletes and expect not to get caught, it's absolutely absurd, in my opinion. What do you think about it?
I mean, absolutely. Like, it's not just like it's a couple athletes trying to cheat and then get in. It's the whole federation. The former anti-doping lab director was the one that was instructed to do this. So it's not like it's just a singular case here or there. It's as a whole, which is just, it's just disgusting to the state of the sport of the Olympics.
Agreed 100%. And do we have a caller on the line right now, Seth?
It was Ethan, actually, but he's going to actually call in after the guest, after Casey calls in. He said he's going to call back.
Sounds good to me. So we will actually hit up Casey in just a couple of minutes. Casey Johnson, beat reporter for the Chicago Tribune. He's going to talk about Denzel Valentine, his performance in the Las Vegas Summer League. And, of course, you saw the glitter and the gleam after he hit those two buzzer beaters in one of the best Summer League basketball games ever played in the championship. But there's so much more to the story than that. We're going to get his opinion on what Valentine's role will be with the Bulls from an insider within the city of Chicago. So you know what? Let's not waste time anymore. Let's hit our first break and get Casey Johnson on the line coming right after this. Once again, I'm your host for the day and the afternoon, Isaac Constance, filling in for Al Martin, who's coming back tomorrow. And you are listening to WKAR AM 870's Current Sports. La, 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 la. Seth, I'll be honest, I just picked these songs randomly from the queue, which I had done before, and this works perfectly. Of course, you're listening to some Kanye West instrumentals right now, and Kanye is from The Chi. And we've actually got Casey Johnson on right now, Chicago Bulls beat reporter for the Chicago Tribune, who's been covering this team for quite a while, and he's going to be on to talk about Denzel Valentine, the Bulls' performance in the Summer League, and the Bulls' offseason moves, as well as everything else NBA, hopefully. So without further ado, let's bring him in. KC, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Oh, Doing very well. Were you in Las Vegas for the Summer League?
Yeah, I was there for the first weekend of Summer League and then came home and then went back for the first day of USA Basketball, and the Bulls were still playing, so I caught that title game against the Timberwolves.
Oh, great. And how was Las Vegas?
The city or the Summer League?
I guess both, but the Summer League itself primarily.
It's going to be a great event. It's really grown over the years. The nice thing about it is pretty much everyone from the league is there. So, you know, you can talk to coaches, agents, executives. So it's a really nice meet and greet place for what we do for a living. The games are pretty secondary because, you know, they don't mean that much, but you can start forming some early impressions of players and see where they project coming for the coming year.
Well, my favorite part about it is always learning names that you might not have heard of before. The first time I actually saw Jeremy Lin was in a Mavericks practice jersey in the Summer League. And that's always my takeaway, is just trying to scout out who could be that next guy who nobody's heard of to come up. Did you notice anybody in the Las Vegas Summer League who impressed you, even though maybe you didn't necessarily consider him as a stud going in?
You know, quite frankly, I don't pay as close attention to that as you, because I'm more focused on guys like Valentine and, you know, guys that I know are going to be on the team that I cover. I mean, obviously I saw Ben Simmons play, so I focus more on the bigger names. I was really impressed with Chris Dunn. I can understand why the Bulls were thinking about trying to trade up for him, because he's going to be really, really good. But I'm more focused on just, you know, the people that project to be rotation players for the Bulls.
Definitely. And speaking of Denzel Valentine, of course, that's what everybody up here wants to hear about primarily, the Lansing native. How would you summarize his performance within the Summer League?
Well, I saw three games, his first two, and then the title game. Obviously, the title game was quite memorable for his late game heroics. And I think that'd be my biggest takeaway from him, is that you have to be impressed with his level of poise and maturity. He did not shoot the ball very well throughout Summer League, but what kind of stands out about him is that that doesn't really seem to rattle him or affect him. He still tries to impact the game throughout, even if his shot isn't falling. And obviously was able to do that in very dramatic fashion in that title game, you know, hitting the late three to force overtime, and then obviously the buzzer beater to win the championship. So, you know, those are things that, you know, Summer League or not, those are things I think can translate to the next level.
All right. Yeah, that was actually my next question, whether, as you mentioned, the games are secondary to almost everything else that goes into it. How did the team seem to gel throughout the performance? Obviously, Jerry and Grant, as well as a new name who looked pretty good throughout the tourney.
Well, I mean, the thing about the Bulls is that, I mean, the entry was a pretty atypical entry. You have five players that are going to be on the regular season. Well, at least four, maybe five, that are going to be on the regular season roster, and that's atypical. So Valentine is one, Jerry Grant is two, Bobby Portis is three, Cristiano Felicio is four, and then Spencer Dinwiddie has an outside shot to stick as a backup point guard. So, quite frankly, they should have been in the title game, because most of the teams don't have rosters like that. But, you know, I think Grant has got a ways to go. He played very, very well, obviously, in the championship game. But, you know, I think he has some trouble with decision-making for a pure point guard. I actually think Valentine is more comfortable handling the ball than Grant. I was really impressed with his ball handling and his court vision and just his poise out there. So I look at Valentine more as a combo 1-2 than a combo 2-3. I think he's going to be in that mix to get backup minutes at both guard positions for the Bulls.
Definitely. And Valentine's had a very up and down summer, as you can imagine. I mean, you know, first the injury reports come out comparing his knees to those of Brandon Roy. Then he's drafted 14th overall, despite all of that, by the Chicago Bulls. And many people had him sliding down into the mid-20s after those injury reports. And then the Summer League, he was more or less poor throughout it, at least from the shooting side, even if he did other attributes of the game pretty well, but then hits those two buzzer beaters. Where does he stand with this team right now after all of the moves, of course, as well, to get Kuyar, Rajon Rondo, and Dwayne Wade?
Well, I mean, on paper, he projects to be in the rotation, but he's got to go out and prove he can stay there now. I mean, you know, summer league is one thing, and then it goes to a whole other level once the regular season begins. So, you know, rookies have to learn the speed of the NBA game. It's much different than NCAA basketball. They've got to learn personnel. They've got to learn scouting reports. So, but he absolutely projects. At the start of training camp, he'll be a rotation guy. So whether he stays there is up to him. Just having been around him a little bit and been around his family a little bit, my sense is he's a pretty committed worker, and I think that he'll probably take that opportunity and run with it, but you got to prove it at the next level, obviously.
When Adam Silver announced the 14th pick, what was your reaction? Did you like it?
I don't, you know, I'm like one of those old school B writers. I have strong opinions. I just kind of write about what happens and try to put it in context. I did say that, I had written that Valentine was likely their pick based off my reporting. I knew the Bulls were very high on him. So he was my pick for the Bulls. So it didn't surprise me at all when he went there at 14. And then once he's picked, I just kind of wait and see how. I don't really form opinions until I watch him in summer league, and not like you're hearing my opinions about him. I think he's very poised, got a real nice demeanor about him. I think he has a chance to make an impact even in his rookie year, which is not always easy in the NBA.
And what about the knee injuries and the missing cartilage that was reported? What allowed the Bulls to sort of see past that when making their pick?
I mean, you can just go by what they tell you. I mean, they said that their doctors felt comfortable with that, those issues. I guess the one first surgery, I guess, was from a high school football injury that was, hasn't been an issue since. And then the other one, what, he missed two games and a couple practices and was right back out there. So, I guess there was a report in the Lansing State Journal quoting the doctor that's saying that teams misread the MRI, you know, so, that kind of stuff can happen. So, the Bulls, we asked them about it once the pick was made, and they said that their doctors, you know, viewed all that stuff. And so obviously they wouldn't have picked them if they didn't feel comfortable with it. So to the Bulls, it's a non-issue.
All right. And of course, the biggest news this offseason for the Bulls was probably the trading of Chicago native Derrick Rose. What ultimately led up to that, and what was the reaction around Chicago after that trade had been announced?
I think the biggest motivation was they were fairly confident he was going to walk for nothing in 2017 free agency, so they felt they proactively needed to try to get something for their asset. And I think secondarily to that, they just kind of felt like it's a relationship that just kind of run its course. There's no ill will on either side, but it was just kind of exhausting these last 4 years from the initial ACL tear in April 2012 till now. There just seemed to be, one injury or one public relations story after another, and both sides just kept trying to put on a good face and make it work, and it just kind of had a wearying feel to it. If you look at his first 4 years from the time he was the number one overall pick in 08 to that ACL tear in April 2012, it was really a too-good-to-be-true story. You know, hometown kid, youngest MVP in league history. And so it's quite the dramatic contrast between the ascent and the descent to his time here. And as far as the reaction, I don't like to paint in broad brush strokes. Everybody has their own opinion. I can say there is a certain segment of the fan base that had really turned against him when he chose to sit out the 12-13 season, and so those people were probably happy that he was gone, but quite a few people were also, sad to see him leave as well.
As well as the offseason moves, of course, of Dwayne Wade and Rajon Rondo, those were big news-making deals as well. When the Chicago Bulls decide to add those two, obviously they add two big names, but at the same time they miss out on a little bit of shooting. What sort of role do you think those two will play for this team going forward, and might it thrust them into an Eastern Conference contender position?
I mean, you got to wait and see how it plays out. I don't think they're, you know, going to be probably as many preseason favorites to win the Eastern Conference. Everyone's going to take the Cavs as far as making it there. A lot of things that have to go right. And Wade and Rondo are going to play huge roles. I mean, they're two premier offseason moves. So, you know, I think they're going to have to be judicious with Wade's minutes. He's, you know, going to be turning 35 in January. He had an unbelievable playoffs last year against Charlotte and Toronto. But he had averaged a career low 30 minutes in the regular season. I think you'll see something similar as far as the plan with how they utilize him, you know, keeping him fresh for the playoffs. And yeah, shooting is going to be a question mark because Wade, Rondo, and Butler are three guys who aren't proficient beyond the three-point arc, so and that's where the league is kind of headed. So you're going to need consistency and good performances from guys like Doug McDermott and Nikola Mirotic this season, no doubt.
Do you think Mirotic is ready to fill in for Pau Gasol?
Do I think what?
Mirotic is ready to fill in for Pau Gasol in some certain ways.
They play different positions. I mean, Pau was a pretty traditional center, and, you know, they've got Robin Lopez playing five for him now with they acquired the Derrick Rose trade. But, you know, Mirotic is going to need to provide floor spacing from the stretch four position. He's played well in spurts and flashes, but hasn't really done it consistently over a two-game season. So he's going to need to take advantage of that opportunity this coming season.
And finally, last question I've got for you, actually. Of course, the biggest move in the NBA this offseason was Kevin Durant going over from the Oklahoma City Thunder to Golden State Warriors. What's your opinion on these super teams that are being assembled, and do you think it's good for the NBA?
I mean, as far as the super teams, to me, the subtext of that is free agency. And my take on free agency always is you a player becomes a free agent and earns that right. So that player should be able to choose wherever he or she wants to go. And more power to LeBron for choosing the Heat in 2010 if that's what made him happy. And more power to Kevin Durant this summer if he wants to go try to win with Golden State. As far as whether it's good or bad for the league, I mean, you know, the Heat didn't win four straight championships. They made the four straight finals, but they didn't win four straight championships. And, you know, everyone's saying the Warriors, because they won 73 and they had Durant, automatically going to win the championship. And they very well may win the championship, but they got to still go out and do it. I mean, everyone thought they were going to win last year, and things happen. Injuries, suspensions, you know, the Draymond Green suspension obviously was huge in the last finals. So, and here's the last thing I'd say is people can say, oh, it's bad for competitive balance. Who's not going to be watching the Warriors? I mean, I'm not going to be able to take my eyes off that team. That's going to be incredible. So, I don't get the criticism of it. Players are free agents for a reason, and they should be able to choose wherever they want to go.
Without a doubt. All right. Thank you so much, Casey. Really enjoyed having you on the show, and hopefully we can get you on again as the season goes along.
All right. Appreciate it. Take it easy.
All right. You too. We're going to hit our second break. You're listening to WKAR AM 870's Current Sports. Again, I'm Isaac Constance filling in for Al Martin. We're going to hit our second break right now. Coming out of that, we'll have Throwback Thursday plus WNBA fining its players for wearing black shirts. All that and more on WKAR's Current Sports. Current Sports. My name is Isaac Constance here live in studio as filling in for Al Martin. His last day away from the mic. He returns tomorrow from his trip in Orlando, Florida. We just finished up talking with Casey Johnson. Chicago Tribune reporter about the Chicago Bulls. Very interesting chat right there as he took us through what Denzel Valentine, local Lansing product, what his role will be going forward on the squad, as well as NBA moves throughout the league. But currently, I believe we do have a caller on line one. That's Ethan from East Lansing. Ethan, what's up?
Hey, Isaac. How's it going, man?
Doing well. How about you?
Doing well. Just enjoying the Kanye instrumentals that you've been throwing on the show today. I can appreciate that. You know that.
Oh, I know. Ethan and I are both huge hip-hop fans. Actually, we went and saw each other at Common Ground, the hip-hop day of that, and yeah. Kanye, nobody better, as far as my opinion goes. But Ethan, I know you were wanting to talk some Tigers. What have you made of the recent stretch and the batting slump that this team has gotten itself into?
I kind of want to get your opinion on something that I've been thinking about just this morning as I was listening to all the negatives from sort of a third-party perspective of you. You're not a huge Tigers fan. Obviously, I've grown up a Tigers fan, and I think most of the Tigers fans would agree with me that once the trade deadline comes up next week, we're going to want to make some moves. But as someone who's not as less biased towards that, move, what do you think the Tigers at the deadline next week? Do you think they should be buyers or sellers?
If I had to choose, I think this team, you know, I'd say more sellers than buyers. And, you know, I'm probably in the minority with that. But Seth and I were talking, and we were saying, well, what position needs to be addressed? And I went through every single starter in the outfield, in the infield, at the pitcher position. And I thought, you know, once this team's healthy, you really can't find too much fault with what they've been doing recently. They've got the pieces. As much as anything, it's been the big names who have been underperforming. Just imagine when JD Martinez once again regains his stability and his health, and he's going to be back into the lineup. That outfield is going to be cluttered. They're going to have to kick someone out. Then the infield, Iglesias, of course, is sticking around. You've got Kinsler playing a good season. Should have been named an All-Star. Miguel Cabrera, you can't kick him out. Victor Martinez, despite his recent struggles, can't really do anything there. And Nick Castellanos is having the season of his life. JV's picking it up. Michael Fulmer, Daniel Boyd. I just don't see that many names where I think the Tigers have to point to and say, you've got to replace that guy, especially once they get healthy again. Now, of course, one guy I take issue with is Pelfrey, and he's pitching tonight against the White Sox. But, you know, that's one move that you could make, just one.
Yeah, and the thing with Pelfrey is, as a number five starter, you kind of only need him to get you to the postseason, because once the postseason comes around, there's only four starting pitchers that usually rotate in the playoffs.
Exactly.
So Pelfrey is kind of a non-factor in terms of the playoffs. He'll be moved to the bullpen, but I still think that they're going to need to add one more veteran pitcher. I'm not sold on Zimmerman coming back and pitching well. He's been letting a lot of base runners all year. Strikeouts are down. Verlander's having a nice rejuvenation this year, which is great. Fulmer, his innings are going to be cut at the end of the year. So I think if they make a move, it's going to be for a starting pitcher. It's nice to finally have a closer, even though K-Rod didn't perform up to par last night. I think that there's a lot of confidence in that clubhouse that he'll be able to get the job done at the end of the season. So I think they're going to really focus on the starting rotation if they make a move.
Oh, I think K-Rod's still a top five or six closer within the entire Major League Baseball league. But I agree with you there. Do you think this team makes the playoffs, Ethan?
As the roster sits right now, I don't think they do. Like I said, I think they need another starting pitcher. I think it's just too much for them to go out right now and have a stagnant offense and not have the dominant starting pitching that they had in recent years. I mean, it was just 2 years ago that they had Scherzer, Verlander, and a dominant Anibal Sanchez in the same rotation.
But yeah, now it's a long time ago, though.
Yeah, that feels like a long time ago, and a couple hundred million ago for Verlander as well. But
very so. Yeah, and of course, everyone else is polarized on the Brad Ausmus train. Where do you think this guy winds up? You think he sticks with Detroit throughout the season? You think he gets cut after? Or you think he's the manager for the future when it comes to the Detroit Tigers?
I think he's in for the rest of the season regardless, but if they don't make the playoffs, I think they cut ties. I don't necessarily think that that's the best move, but that's just the way baseball has been going these days. The trends are the manager doesn't make the playoffs in 2 or 3 years, especially with a big market like Detroit. Usually see themselves out the door, and that's not anything to say that Brad Austin's is a poor manager. I think it has a combination of circumstances. When he came in, he was brought into a team that's been hampered by a lot of huge contracts, and it's not always conducive to a team's success to have guys that are over 30 being paid $25-30 million a year like Cabrera and Verlander are.
Definitely agree with you on that one. Ethan, great call. Thank you for listening today.
Hey, no problem. Have a good one, Isaac. Take it easy.
Yeah, you too, Ethan. Well, Seth, I think it's about time we start closing out the show. Only 7 minutes left. We do have time for maybe one more quick call if somebody wanted to squeeze it in. 517-355-9527. But there is a story that I was reading and just wanted to touch on, which was that WNBA issuing fines for T-shirts, but at the same time, it stood up and supported its players for their, quote, passionate advocacy. Thought this was very odd. Three teams were fined $5,000, and each player sporting a black shirt, a plain black short, even though it was the league's official Adidas brand, was fined $500, which might not sound like a lot, but WNBA players are, of course, criminally underpaid. And the official reason for that was the WNBA rules state that uniforms may not be altered in any way. Now, Indiana Fever player Breanne January was obviously upset about this. Quote, you have a league that is 90, if not above 90% African American, and you know you have an issue that is directly affecting them and the people they know, and you have a league that isn't willing to side with them. Very interesting quote right there. And WNBA president Lisa Borders said that she was fine with the players speaking out, but still chose to fine them. I mean, she said, quote, we are proud of WNBA players' engagement and passionate advocacy for nonviolent solutions to difficult social issues, but expect them to comply with the league's uniform guidelines. Yeah, that's a little bit of a head-scratcher for me. It just seems all sort of backwards if you're endorsing a player's decisions. And they're wearing the official Adidas shirt, so I don't think Adidas themselves could necessarily press this issue. But at the same time, you choose to fine them nonetheless. I have no problem with what you stand up for as a player. It always gives me an extra bit of assurance that we're not just watching some pre-planned play taking place on a hardwood court or wherever. When a player does do something knowing that they might get fined because they think it's the right thing to do. I don't care what side you're taking on the matter, but for players to be role models, that's what they have to do. Being role models has to transcend what goes into playing on a court. It has to go past athletic prowess, and it has to actually go into the deeper meaning issues. And that's what these players were trying to do, and they were fined for it. You saw in the NBA, LeBron James and Derrick Rose wearing shirts that said, I can't breathe, as a tribute to Eric Gardner. And I've got no problem if an NBA player wears a shirt which is more in favor of the police in a certain scenario. But I think for players to actually portray themselves as role models and epitomes of what kids aspire to be, they need to take a stance on these issues. And I've got no problem if kids do look up to players, in part because of where they do stand on certain matters like these. Seth, I'm not sure about you. I find it ridiculous that these women were fined for wearing T-shirts.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's just a double standard. You're saying that, and another player that got fined, Phoenix Mercury forward Misty Bass, tweeted, don't say we have a voice and then fine us because we use it. Hashtag not puppets, hashtag cut the strings. And that sums it up right there. Don't say that we want you to express yourself, but then when we do, punish us for it. It just doesn't make sense.
Well, and having uniform guidelines is the reason. These players seemingly were pretty meticulous about making sure that they did adhere to those.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as if they did wear them over their actual uniforms. They wore them in warmups and afterwards. And they were the Adidas brand, the official sponsor. I think that only adds to the chaos of this situation.
I just think it's good that people on a pedestal more and more, you've seen like actors and things like that within the past month or two with all the terrible events going on in the world, and whether it be in the country or out of the country, they've been speaking up about it. And you have the players at the ESPYs, LeBron James and them, speak out as well. And now you have just more and more players using their voice to kind of just speak on these issues, and I don't have a problem with it. And clearly they didn't. They knew they were going to get fined. They tried to keep up with the regulations as best they could, but they still knew that they were doing what they thought was best, and I commend them for it. At least they stood up for what they thought was right.
Exactly. And like I said before, I don't care what side someone takes on an issue unless it's just flat out morally wrong. And we've seen athletes with that before. We've seen the Hulk Hogan tape, among other things. But I do care if athletes actually take a stance. One thing that really irked me was when Steph Curry got castigated for not flat out coming out and endorsing a policy that would change Charlotte's Gay Rights Act or whatever. The man doesn't believe in it. He has no obligation to do it. But I do like seeing players take a stance one way or another. So, folks, just a minute and a half left. We are going to hit Throwback Thursday, just really quickly. We're not even going to play the music. But back in 1884, the first test cricket match was played at Lord's. And, of course, that makes me think of England and Lord the Singer. The 13th women's Wimbledon tennis match, Charlotte Cooper beat A. Pickering in 1896. In 1923, the Phillies scored 12 runs in the sixth inning alone to beat the Chicago Cubs 17-4. Obviously, the curse is nothing new. And in 1945, a local feel, Detroit Tigers and Philly A's play 24 innings to a 1-1 tie. And that's why Americans cannot stand soccer to this very day. Because if you sit through a long period of sports, you expect there to be a victor one way or another. That's all for Throwback Thursday this week, and that's all for me at the host chair. Al Martin returns tomorrow back from his trip in Orlando, Florida. You've been listening to Isaac Constance Monday through Thursday of this week, and you've been listening to WKR AM 870 Current Sports. I really appreciate all of you tuning in, and hey, we hope to catch you tomorrow as well. Take care. And as always, in an Al Martin tribute, be easy, people.